Well, chronic wasting disease has been detected in wild and farmed white-tailed deer in more than half of Wisconsin's 72 counties. And the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is currently reviewing its management policy for the disease. Larry Mueller here. It's great to have back to Michael Foy to talk with us about CWD. Michael, a retired DNR field wildlife biologist, over 15 years of experience with CWD. Mike's a current member of the Wildlife Work Group for Wisconsin's Green Fire. It provides science-based analysis and conservation policy recommendations. So it's great to have him back. Brian Reisinger will be with us at noon to talk about his book, Land Rich, Cash Poor. But first, want to hear from you about CWD. Are you going deer hunting this fall? If you harvest a deer, do you get it tested or know how to do it? Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Mike Foy, welcome back. Good to have you with us again. Been a long time.
Yeah, it has been, Larry. Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, not so happy about chronic wasting disease. It's been found in at least one wild deer in 46 of our 72 counties, if I'm not mistaken, and quite prevalent in some counties, probably more than others.
That's correct. It's still primarily concentrated in the southwestern counties where it was first discovered in 2002 testing of 2001 deer taken right outside of Madison in the town of Vermont. Three deer were taken that first season of 2001, and they were looking for other diseases and just were taking samples for anything that might be interesting, and boom, it popped up. So it was quite a shock.
Indeed, it was a shock. I remember that very well. And, you know, CWD is kind of like Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease in humans. If you get it, the deer is a dead, essentially, isn't
yep.
it?
Yep. Let's be clear that there have been no human cases of CWD reported
right.
yet, but it is a very similar disease. Creutzfeldt-Jakob is unique to people, I believe, and CWD is unique to cervids, and there may be some concern about other similar, ungulates and such, but it's pretty much unique to humans, unique to the deer family at this point. But there are also other versions for mink and other things. So it's a scary kind of disease. You don't want to get it, but let's be clear, it hasn't ever been shown to be in people yet.
Yeah. And I understand that chronic wasting disease in deer is leveling off in some of those most heavily infected Wisconsin counties. Is that correct?
Well, that's what it looks like. The question is why, and is it really happening? But for many years, we had basically exponential disease prevalence increase in those areas where we first discovered it, southwestern counties. But as any biology student here on campus can tell you, you can't have exponential growth forever, and at some point it's going to level off, either because a population will in a closed system will go extinct, or it will start to vary around an asymptote, and that's what appears to be happening. Now, the question is why, and we're not sure that's really good news, because it just means that CWD really has its claws in us down there.
Yeah. So what percentage of, you guys have done it with the Green Fire and others have done some research on it. What percentage of the deer herd is infected?
Well, overall, in some of the most infected counties, Iowa, Richland, Sauk. It's varying right around 25, 27, 30%. In adult males, it can be higher than that. Adult females are typically lower, and then yearling males are kind of bounce around, but they're usually around the same as adult females, and then yearling females are less than any of the other three cohorts. So, but you know, we've had areas where we see prevalence up into the 40s, and for short periods, even probably crossing into the 50%. So it's quite alarming. And again, you know, unlike other diseases that typically you have a certain percentage of the population that recovers and then has at least some resistance to reinfection, we don't know that to be the case yet in CWT. It seems to be pretty universally fatal from what the research scientists tell us.
Yeah, and we should maybe review how's it spread. It's spread through at least saliva, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, saliva, feces. There was concern about whether fawns born of infected mothers would be sick, and it doesn't seem to pass in utero, but a fawn can relatively quickly become infected if it has an infected mother, because just, you know, the constant grooming that happens when they're young, the licking and everything like that. So it is primarily basically bodily fluids that contain this misshapen protein called a prion. So it's not a bacteria, it's not a virus, it's not a fungus. It's basically something that all mammals have in us, these proteins, and only when they become misshapen do they cause disease, and that's a part of a problem for trying to figure out how to treat it, is because the body doesn't readily recognize these proteins as being foreign bodies, and so it doesn't develop antibodies to them and to our understanding. So it's a real challenge.
Yeah, it is. And it's affected, I think, Wisconsin's deer hunting culture and traditions. I mean, is that your feeling?
I agree 100%, Larry. I can just give an example on my own land in Iowa County. For the last five deer that I've taken off my own family's land have been sick. And I'm getting to an age where, you know, hauling them up out of the bottoms and up to the top of the hill where the cars are parked is not as easy as it once was, and it's just something you really have to start thinking about, is, okay, what am I going to do with this? Is it something I want to take and spend money to get processed right away? Or do I want to do it myself, only to find out later that it's CWD positive, and I really do not want to eat that or feed it to my family? It's a real concern, and I think it's taken the shine off a little bit. And the thing we're trying to do is figure out is how we can get this to a level where it doesn't really dominate our CWD or deer management, but might become a nuisance or something, but something we can live with, but not going to be a real problem for us, where, you know, I have trouble putting a deer in the freezer because they're all sick on my land.
Yeah, it's I've heard very similar stories from others who have just kind of gotten disgusted with four or five in a row, and you just wonder, well, why should I even be out there?
Yeah, and there's real concern too about, you know, the next generation. It's a very exciting thing for a young person to get their first deer, or you know, young adult hunters. I mentor hunters for many years on my land, and And when they get them, and then if they come back sick, it's like, well, I just...
Yeah.
That just takes the enjoyment and this and the accomplishment right off the table. It's really sad.
You can join in, too. Questions or comments about CWD, our guest Michael Foy, give a call. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. Richard in Two Rivers, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Richard.
Yeah, hi. Michael said that it didn't cross the barrier into humans, but it has. I'll give you a perfect example. It was large containment hogs, and Hormel. I shouldn't say Hormel. They had a brain line where they were cutting the brains out, and they were doing 40,000 pigs a day. And the people all got contaminated with chronic wasting disease.
So I need to clarify that the different spongiform diseases can cross species barrier. And the famous example is mad cow, where the bovine version crossed over, probably got infected through animal feed supplements, possibly from sheep. No one's quite certain. But it got into the cattle, then transmitted it to humans, most notoriously in the United Kingdom. So you're right that there is the potential for all these to cross over, but I do need to correct you that we have no knowledge, at least that I have any awareness of, that CWD has ever crossed into people. It has not been shown to happen, to my knowledge.
And I think Richard was talking about swine and hogs operation, which would be a different, it wouldn't be CWD, would it?
No, and I am not familiar with that case or that situation, but many species have different, not species, families of livestock and animals have their own types of TSC diseases, and in very rare cases, they can cross over into other species or other families of mammals once they get over this barrier to transmission. It's very hard to do, but it does happen, but it has not happened with CWD.
Mm-hmm. All right. Richard, thank you again. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234, email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking today with Michael Foy, retired DNR Field One Life biologist. He's a member of the working group of Green Fire, and it provides science-based analysis and conservation recommendations. Great to have him with us. Lots of callers with questions. Bruce in Bayfield County, I'm sorry. Bruce, what's on your mind?
I tuned in late, and I'm wondering, do the affected deer manifest? Can you tell, do they look sick, or is the only way to find out for sure is to have them tested?
Great question, Bruce. Yes and no. When deer get to what's called the clinical stage, which is usually after at least a year of infection, potentially as much as 2 years, average I think is 15, 17 months, something like that, they start to waste. That's where the name comes from. They waste away. They quit feeding as vigorously. And basically they get thinner, they start to have other very common symptoms, drooping ears, kind of a vacant, unaware look in their eyes, and sometimes drooling, things like that. And, you know, those can, you know, and they get very skinny, and you can see the bones, you can see the spine, you can see the hip pointers. You know, if you see a deer like that, there's a good possibility in certain parts of the state, particularly the Southwest, as I said, that that deer has CWD. Having said that, part of my former job at DNR was to go out and investigate these things, and we, you know, we removed a number of very sick-looking deer from people's barnyards and places that ended up having internal injuries from a car deer collision or something like that, and just were off their feed. So you can't tell for sure without having the test done, but you can see the symptoms in an advanced stage disease. But for the vast majority of the deer, you cannot tell when they're in the field. They look perfectly fine, they act perfectly fine, and there's no really good way to tell, which is one of the real challenges about how to try and manage or control the disease.
Bruce, thank you. And how long does it take to get a test back? Bruce was wondering.
I think the average last year was 9 days, which is I find to be extraordinary. The DNR has really been working on this. Back in the early days, it would take 3, 4, 5. You know, if you got a deer on opening weekend and then got way in the back of the line, it could take, in some cases, multiple months. But they've really been working to try and speed it up, and also the Wisconsin Veterinary Diagnostic Lab has really scaled things up, their equipment and their staffing, and they've just gotten really better at turning the results around. But it's still, you know, an inconvenience. It's hard, especially early in the season. What do you do with a deer when it's warm out and you don't have your test results immediately? And so the hope to get a very rapid test, one that can be used in the field, is high on the minds of a lot of research folks. And there's been some progress made that way using some very sophisticated testing techniques that we will have a readily available and affordable field test. But I need to say that, you know, just having quicker test results doesn't help with that problem of how do you tell which deer are sick before you shoot. So, or, you know, trying to shoot deer that are sick. So it's a real management problem.
Bob in Sun Prairie, it's your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi, I got a two-part question, actually. I have quit deer hunting myself, but years ago I grew up in Waupaca County, which is a huge deer country, and I hunted, and mainly it was a family thing. But anyway, a lot of the old hunters that I talked to from that area, they think chronic wasting disease has been around for a long, long, long time. So I'm wondering if there's any research on how long it's been around. And the second part of my question is, I have a good friend who died actually from a form of brain cancer, and his son has told me that he firmly believes it had something to do with his father eating primarily venison and elk. He was also an elk hunter and would bring elk home from Wyoming and out that way. And I'm wondering, is there any difference between the CWD in elk and in deer?
Generally, no. It's this very similar, potentially identical. Each individual species has its own genotype, and the genes are not always perfectly aligned. But for most, you know, most purposes, you can say that the disease is the same, but how the species reacts to the disease can vary some. So, you know, the mule deer, whitetails, elk, they all have a little bit of a different disease progression and such. And then your first part, Bob, about was about whether a brain cancer could have been from it. Not that I'm aware of. You know, cancer is a terrible thing, of course, but I have not heard of cancer being a source of disease mortality from CWD. It is a it's more of a loss of you know the ability to for the brain to control the body's functions and such like that. So both terrible diseases, but but not very similar as far as I know.
Thank you, Bob, for calling. Forrest in Stevens Point will go to you next. Hi, Forrest. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. My question, and I'll take the answer off air. So what would you feel is the best management, you know, trying to get this under control, including statewide baiting bans, et cetera, possibly the elimination of high fence hunt situations, et cetera, et cetera. There seems to be a business interest that tends to override good science, and having our politicians involved, and I know every one of them are, you know, wildlife biologists by training, I can see it. Is that one of the issues, is getting the political spectrum out of this equation? And I'll take my answer off air.
Well, in some ways, that's the proverbial $64,000 question for us. I think what the DNR has been reviewing their response plan and getting ready to do a new version of it, and they've brought in a number of experts, one of them who is a really, really smart modeler that is able to plug in all these things. And I'm pretty sure he's concluded, and everybody I know says likewise that studies this, is there is no one silver bullet, but some things we can do is get our deer herd lower overall. We're not talking about going back to what we were first trying in the early 2000s, which is get it very low, but let's try and get it down. I mean, right now we're going to be close to 2 million deer, which is an awful lot, the historically high numbers. And so one thing right there that is new for this year is there's going to be a, if you harvest a CWD positive deer, it used to be, I have one in my hunting bag right now, you get a replacement tag if you shot a buck, and you would get a replacement tag for an antlerless deer if you shot an antlerless deer. Well, new this year, this was the idea of Doug Duren, and who also has had some other really good ideas, like the adopt a kiosk thing to help people have more convenient sampling, and adopt a dumpster. And basically, if you get a shoot a CWD positive antlerless deer, you get an either sex tag that you can use in the same deer management unit in the same land type. So that's a really good idea, and I think it may help people, you know, say, hey, let's take another antlerless deer and help out. And then we also have the, you know, the deer donation and a lot of ways to help people use that venison and potentially get venison to people that don't hunt. So
Charlie wonders, should everyone who shoots a deer have it tested regardless of where they are?
Well, I would say, Charlie, that is really what we would love to see, particularly in areas where we don't have a lot of information. And that's pretty easy. You can go right on the DNR's website and you can find whole townships in some cases whole sections that have, or the other way around, that have really very few samples. We don't necessarily need a lot of more samples in Iowa County, but from a personal standpoint, I test every deer I hunt, I shoot, and I bring home because I don't want to be the guy that makes medical history and has this jump over into people. And it is just something that it would be great if we would test more deer at some limit. At some point, we can't test our entire deer harvest, 300,000 a year. The cost would be enormous, but we can. You can certainly help out, and you can ask your local DNR wildlife biologist where samples are needed or if they're needed from your farm.
Michael, on that note, we're out of time. We had lots of callers still with questions or comments, but I appreciate your time, and I hope we can get you. I think it's been about 5 years since you've been here. We're going to get you back sooner than that.
Yeah, Larry, and as long as I'm correcting people, I just want to make sure that earlier when we were on the shift change here, you said CWD and dairy cattle. That is not happening. Please don't run to the phones with alarm. Thank you very much. Michael, I enjoyed being here.
Michael Foy, retired DNR wildlife biologist. Boy, that was a slip of the tongue. Well, coming up, we're going to talk about a new book on farms and farming. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller.